Enough of these groupies. Stay aside. Let me tell you something. Before we even start, do me a favor. I don't know how many of you people knew this friend of ours. He was on the last comic standing last year. He was a finalist. A real good friend of ours, Mikey D. And he passed away Monday. A heart attack. 13 years clean. 44 years old. He made a lot of us laugh. He was a real gentle giant in these rooms. So let's have an extra moment of silence tonight just for Mikey, okay, please? Thank you. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. My name's Paul Efron. And you know, it's a privilege and it's a blessing to be here tonight. I'm excited about it. I don't know how many of you are going to come for all 12 weeks or not, but I promise you, I'm going to be here, and I am going to enjoy this deal. I get zoomed up when I get the opportunity and the privilege to do this and to carry you along on a journey that has been gifted to me. Gifted. I didn't earn it. I don't deserve it. I don't know why so many don't get it, but for today, I've got it. And that's all we have for today, right here, every one of us. And, you know, someone came up to me before the meeting. That's the part that you're going to all have to realize with me. Cell phones, if they go off, I lose it. I mean, I'm old, I'm a mental patient, which you might ask, and I just can't retrace my steps. So please work with me. When they say no cell phones, please, because it'll send me into psycho place, please. And, you know, my friend Steve tonight, we were at Lester's where, I mean, I've been privileged to do this for over 20 years, every 2 years. And it's great for me. I do it every 2 years, not like some of the legends here that do it every year, because I like the two-year experience in the middle because my whole life changes every 2 years. So I'm not like giving you something that's like rote and you know, in any case, the greatest thing is if you're new or you're coming back, you're off the hook. And that was told to me a long, long time ago. And I have to promise you, it's true. And it's as true today as it was the day I got here. And some woman, a beautiful woman at the early part of the meeting, came up to me and gave me a hug and said, thank you so much. Because a number of years ago, I was sitting here and you said to me that I was off the hook. And I've been sober and clean ever since. Okay? And that's what we offer here. That's the deal. If we just affect one life, like Mikey, I was reading on Facebook, you know, this friend of ours that just passed, Mikey D. And what he was called, I don't know why, it's probably a big comedy show, and God needs some laughs. I don't know, he's the funniest guy on the planet. And so, but he was grabbed, just like that. But reading all of the Facebook posts in the last 2 days showed me the legacy that he left. He didn't leave the money or any of that other crap. We take with us when we leave that which we've given away. This guy gave coast to coast around the world and made a lot of people laugh. What greater way to leave than to have made people laugh? So that's the deal. He's been in my thoughts and prayers for the last few days. It's a perfect example, by the way, which we're going to get to talk about over the course of the 12 weeks, how don't make any long-term plans. I'm serious. I mean, you know, I got stories, which I'll get into, about my dad, about my best friend Maurice, about so many people, about now Mikey, about just grabbed like that in the middle of the deal. Okay? Now, that's one of the reasons in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're taught to live in the day. All we ever have to deal with is 24 hours. Do everything you have to do today because you may not have it tomorrow. And none of us are guaranteed a tomorrow. And so if I put my head on the pillow at night and say, you know what, I didn't leave too many stones unturned today. I helped a couple of people. I answered a few calls. And if there's a tomorrow, great. And if not, when I leave, I don't want there to be any regrets from me that, oh, I wished I would have. Okay, so that's really what we're going to talk about here for the next 12 weeks, because what we have here in the 12 steps is a blueprint for living. And I'm looking around this room, and a lot of people look like they need a blueprint for something, because we've had some issues to get you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, you don't get here because you're just like, we're having a party out there. I've got to tell you something. By the way, I broke my glasses today, and just for the example to show you like how a day can really start with like all sorts of negative stuff, but I don't care. I woke up at about 5:17 this morning, and I jump out of bed, which I always do, because I did a survey. 95% of everyone who dies dies lying down. So, 5:17 this morning, I'm up and out and ready to roll. I'm going to do my meditation, get a little closer to the power, get right for the day. However, this morning at 5:17 when I woke up, I said, oh my God. I had this immediate flash that last night when I came home, early-ish, I don't know, 6 or 7 o'clock, and I had my top down because I was going to go back out to eat. I never went back out to eat, so my top was down all night. That's not a good idea in Florida, even if it doesn't rain. So I put on a pair of shorts, and I went out with no shirt, which is not like the greatest sight these days, but it was early in the morning, so nobody saw me, and I went and put the top up, and I had to wipe the thing. Anyway, so that was the way the day began. Now, in case you, oh, by the way, the guy from South Jersey, welcome. Glad to have you. What are you, running from Atlantic City? Trying to beat your markers down here at the 12-step house? Everybody, yeah, that's how we all got here. Welcome. And we're all running from something when we get here. It's the safe house. Anyway, in case you have a hearing problem, I'm from New York. And my voice, Queens, New York, right. My voice has been giving me problems. Okay? I mean, really, to the point that I have a voice therapist and a voice coach. Now, I'm not an opera singer, but I haven't seen her in a couple of 3 years, and I went to see her on Thursday. No, because it's starting to bother me, and I was worried that to do this 12 weeks, I didn't know how I was going to do it. And I kept putting it off and putting it off. So I went to see her. She's a top ENT doctor in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I went to see her Thursday, and she puts the thing down my throat. Now, my wife was flying into town on Friday from New York. And so I go there, and she looks at me and says, oh, Paul, they're all swollen and terrible. I mean, they're worse than they were 3 years ago when you came to see me. I said, well, Doc, starting Tuesday night, I have to speak for a straight hour every week for the next 3 months. She said, oh, my God. She says, well, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on voice rest for 72 hours. Now, think about this. So I said, Doc, would you give me a letter to that effect? This is it. South Florida ENT doctor. To whom it may concern. Dated March 4th, 2011. The patient, Paul Efron, has been under our care for his ears, nose, and throat, and was seen today. He is to remain on complete voice rest until Tuesday, March 8th, 2011. So I picked my wife up from the airport, and I handed her the greatest thing in the world. You get a get-out-of-jail-free card. It doesn't get better than that. It was so funny. I was hysterical. Listen, the other thing I'm going to promise you, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't laughing. There was nothing to laugh about. My life had become tragic in every manner, way, shape, and form. I imagine that's the case if you're new or you've been here a while. You got here because of desperation, because of the fact that I mean, how did this happen? So I'm going to share a little bit about my story. This is the first step, and what's happened to me over the years. What's happened to me over the years is this is the step I least like talking about. Oh, come on, stick around. That's what happened to me in the Catskills. The same thing, they walk out. We have to give some more medication to some people. In any case, listen, come on, refocus, defocus. This step to me has become the most important because you have to do it perfectly, but the one I least like talking about. Because if you're here and you've surrendered and you've said to yourself, no matter what, I can't pick up. We give you all the tools how not to pick up. And if you can get to that surrender place by sitting right here, having gotten here, counting your blessings, being grateful, then the next 11 steps is what this whole deal's about. This first step, it's very cute. We'll give you what it says. We'll go through a couple of little stories about it. But the fact is, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and drugs, by the way. You know, they don't listen to this. This is like for any of those people that tell you you can't talk about drugs in AA. Listen to this. No, I want you, this just happened to me, which is why I'm continually learning. I had this most incredible CD that was given to me by someone, which was Bill Wilson, the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, speaking at the first anniversary of the Kips Bay Group in New York City in 1950. The first anniversary. Now, he's talking and he's telling about, as he starts talking, he gets a telegram that on this day in 1950, Dr. Bob had just died. And he didn't know whether he should speak or not go. And Lois, his wife, and Father Ed Dowling and a bunch of them said, no, you go because that's where you have to be with your friends. And he gives this talk. In the talk, in 1950, in the talk given by Bill Wilson, co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, in 1950, he says the following. Alcoholics Anonymous was taking, he tells the story of how it started from the Oxford Group. And he talks about the Oxford Group and he says the Oxford Group was for a group of people that couldn't handle their drinking, their drugging, or their gambling. 1950, Bill Wilson, co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if anybody like wants to say, like, oh my, this guy was a pillhead, he was an acid freak. I mean, what are you kidding me? He wrote the steps on Osley Acid, and you're telling me that. In any case. So let's realize that if you pick up anything once you're here, you're going to be in trouble. That's the bottom line. I don't care how far you've gone down, because the beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, once you're here, you can stop that downward spiral. You do not have to take the elevator to the bottom. Many people here that I'm looking around have taken the elevator to the sub-basements. I mean, I thought I had a pretty tragic story. I heard a friend of mine over the weekend, it made me seem like Mary Poppins. I swear to God, he's got shot, killed. But I mean, I never got shot. I was too skinny. By the way, that's another thing. In case, like, what you see here might be a little repulsive, I need to tell you something. In 1980, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous on the 12th of February, by the grace of God, and we'll talk about all of this starting next week, about the power of God, the big and a bang. But I was 145 pounds. I weighed a size 31 waist. I was tan. And quite frankly, I was pretty hot. I can't put it any other way. So the fact that I still consider myself a chick magnet 31 years later and almost 100 pounds later shows denial runs deep. Oh, there's my second favorite Sandra in the whole world. Go sit down, darling. That's because my wife's name's Sandra, and she's my second favorite. Nice to see you. I had to say that because it was being taped. Anyway, listen. My story is very simple, and it's my story, and it's tragic in its own right. I was born in 1948. I'm a product of the 60s. There's a song by Jackson Browne that says, in 65 we were 17, in 69 we were 21. That was my age. That is my age. By the time I was 17 years old, and I had gone to Fort Hamilton because the Vietnam War was raging and they had draft numbers, et cetera, et cetera. The problem was, after booze and after having gotten the first time I ever drank, I ended up in the bushes in a club in Long Island, in Glen Cove. I ended up throwing up in the bushes. All the other guys went back in, had a great night. They picked me up. They put me in the back of the car. I was 16 years old. They rang my mother's doorbell and left me there. And the next morning, I woke up with a full-blown case of poison ivy, head to toe. The bushes they threw me in the first time I drank were poison ivy bushes. Many, many, many years later, in this book, very early in this book, it says the following. It says, it will appear that we have an allergy to alcohol. Helen Keller could have told that I had an allergy to alcohol. But that wasn't the last time, it was the first time. If that was all there was, I would have gone on to become the first Jewish president of the United States. But that's not the way it played out. Because the way it played out is the Vietnam War. I'm 17 years old. I'd already been thrown out of Hebrew school. I had already been thrown out of high school. And now I get my draft notice and I go to Fort Hamilton in Brooklyn. The problem is my arms were bleeding because by this time I was addicted to narcotics. And they looked at me and they said, you know what? You're going to have to sit on that bench. And they said, we'll take you, but only after women and children. And then we're not even sure if we want you. You know? They wanted me to sign up for the North Vietnamese team or something. Anyway, so that started a whole other scenario of self-destruction, humiliation, degradation. And so I'm just going to sum it up very quickly. Very quickly. 1965, the Beatles. You've heard of them? Has everyone heard of them? I mean, some of the people, I don't know, you're very young. Everyone's heard of the Beatles?
Yeah.
Okay, please, come on, work with me here. Smile, would you smile? That's what I want, that's all. Come on, please, otherwise I get depressed, you know? Well, the Beatles came to Shea Stadium, which is right where I'm from, in Queens, New York City, and they came to perform. A bunch of us stormed the fences to get into the stadium. We heard the Beatles. I woke up 15 years later. That's my story. I have spoken to attorneys about bringing a class action suit against the remaining Beatles. Nobody wants to take the case. I think I have a case here, Stu, if you want. No, you'll take it. Yeah. Desperation. You got the contingency. Don't worry about it. Anyway, so what happened is from 1965 to 1980. Can you next week have that train stop? From 1965 to 1980, my life just squirreled down, spiraled down, like water in a sink. It started out cute. I loved drinking and drugging from 1965 to 1969. It was party time. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, no boundaries. I mean, the men and the women. It wasn't like only me. And you know, and the men and the men. And the women and the women. It didn't matter. I mean, the fact is, this is when this whole country, which will be a topic for another meeting at another time, I think began going down the tubes. Because of the fact, there were no rules. We were just out there, Haight-Ashbury, Woodstock. And by the way, the last time that I enjoyed getting loaded was at Woodstock. That was the end of my partying with booze and drugs. However, if I didn't get here till 1980, that means those 11 years in between Woodstock and Alcoholics and Narcotics Anonymous were pretty tragic. And you know what? They were. And I'm going to sum up what they involved. This is a progressive disease. It's progressive, it's terminal, and it's incurable. It can be arrested at some point. If we come here, we hang in, we jump in the deal, and we have it arrested. It's under control. But as my disease progressed, this is what happened. It progressed, the chemicals I was using progressed, from beer, booze, more booze, pot, speed, coke, acid, mescaline, heroin, 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 heroin. And once you're there, you don't need to look anywhere else. And so that time of my life, I was just stuck in a myopic place. I realized my life is over. There's no point looking, sharing, caring anymore. I progressed in my arrests from public intoxication to public intoxication to misdemeanor driving under the influence to possession to direct sale to 5 felonies in Newport, Rhode Island at the Newport Jazz Festival, facing 15 years in prison. The progression of the disease. My party was over. Nobody told me about this joint. Nobody told me if I don't take the first one, I'm off the hook. Nobody told me if I share with someone else, I'll be okay. That's not the way I was brought up. You don't put your stuff out there. You deal with it. You're a man, you deal with it. Whatever it is. Now the progression of where I went after that, to beat the case, my dad, may he rest in peace, hired this great attorney who told me that if you go to this place, Daytop Village, we're going to get your felonies broken down to misdemeanors, we're going to send you upstate, and you're going to be just fine. Well, I couldn't make it. I made it there 5 days as an outpatient. And I went to the corner and I called the attorney and I said, listen, I'd rather go to prison for 15 years than sit in another one of these events for the afternoon. So he then did some more manipulation and got me installed in a new thing that had just started in New York called methadone maintenance, and that's where I languished for the next 11 years. Now, let's get to the real juicy part of this progression. This is what I call my mental hospital, or institution, or asylum, or house for the very, very nervous part of my story. Because what happened in 1976, I ended up in one of these beautiful places, and then I went to a not-so-beautiful place, another not-so-beautiful place, and I ended up in the place in New York where if you're there and you're going to the beach, your parents point and they say, if you don't straighten up, you're going to end up there. I did. And that's the place called Creedmoor State Hospital. We will talk more about that in coming weeks. Because that's many of my friends, my close friends, think I'm still an outpatient in Creedmoor. I'm not too sure they're not right. But now let's talk about the first step, what it means, what it is, how we can ensure that we've got it for today. And it's very simple. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. The first half of that step is a truth. A truth can never be changed. I was powerless over alcohol the day I got here. I'm going to be powerless over alcohol until the day I die. That's a truth. It's cast in stone. So if you're sitting here today and you pick up a drink or a drug after any period of sobriety, I promise you, I'm not saying this even to scare you. I'm just promising you, whatever got you here at this point in your life will seem like how you wished you could get that bad stuff back. based on what's going to happen if you pick up again. So if you're going to pick up, just remember what I'm saying. I'm not making this up. I've been to more funerals of people that picked up that one last time. Jails, institutions, and death. Now, I'm looking at this crowd. I'm going to take a shot that a big portion have been to jails. I mean, if you haven't, there's felony warrants out there looking for you. Now, I'm going to tell you something else, because this you may not know. About institutions, that sounds scary, you know, like you have to be in Creedmoor State Hospital to be in an institution. No. Let me share this with you. If you are in one of the following places, or if you have been in a rehabilitation center, a 28-day program, a halfway house, a three-quarter way house, a sober living, a place where they tell you when to get up, when to go to sleep, and at 6 or 7 o'clock every night, they say, now get on the van. That is an institution. So as we progress through the steps, and you have this problem with, I am not insane, let me share something. No normal person has to be told to get in the van. Just want to clarify that. You know, the great news is, once you get here to Alcoholics Anonymous, regardless of what happened to you before you got here, your life can get to a place which is not even fathomable, it's not believable. And that's why I love going through this, because I really need to pinch myself when I think of what's happened in my life since I got to you people. Maybe you could share or help me understand this following little thing. I got here 2 months before my 32nd birthday. Next month, I'm going to be 63 years old. How's that possible? I'm a dyed-in-the-wool alcoholic, junkie, degenerate, reprobate, as it says in this book somewhere, a mental defective. I love that page. No, some people say, I'm not a mental defective. It says it right in the book. I'll find the location for you next week. But the bottom line is, we're all defective. That's how we got here. I didn't, like, when I was going to school, my folks didn't look at me and said, you know, Paul, my goal for you, a couple of months before you're 32, after you've ruined our lives and everyone else you ever met, I'm sort of hoping you find your way into one of those 12-step programs. So after you've ruined everyone's confidence in anything you could ever conceive, then you can rebuild from the gutter, and maybe we'll be around for a minute to see that. And that's really what happened, which we'll talk about later. But the key is, man, I treasure so much having been rescued from the dung heap of life. Wherever that was in your own life. Because I was down there. I had gone from this happy-go-lucky kid. I became suicidal. I wanted to kill myself every minute of every day in 1975 and 1976. I was a happy kid. What happened? Booze and drugs robbed me. They took it from me. They put me in a place, a fetal position, where I no longer wanted to go on, not another minute. And if you haven't been to that place yet, I pray that you don't have to go there. And if you have been to that place, I truly hope and pray you don't have to revisit it. And what we have here is we have the answer to how not to go back there. That's simply what we have. The first half of that first step, that's the truth. It's never going to change. But let me give you the good part of that step, the second part of it. That our lives had become unmanageable, that's a fact. And you know what? A fact can change, it does change, and it has changed, certainly in my life. Because my life is no longer unmanageable. Why is that? Well, that's where we're going to talk about for the next 11 weeks, because I found a manager. I found a manager, someone to operate my store. I got it quiet? Oh. Stephen's concerned about my voice. He's like, I think he's on the doctor's payroll. He goes like, shh. Anyway, so we were at Lester's tonight, and we walk in there, and nobody's there. So I like freak out. I said, what do you mean nobody's here? So Steve looks at me, because I haven't done this for 2+ years. Steve looks at me, he says, you know what it's like, Doc? It's like the Stones concerts. When they got old, people stopped rushing to hear them. So I'm happy that there's people here, because there was no one at Lester's. When I finally got to you people, because of my mental hospital escapades, I had already been declared by the United States government an official mental defective with papers from the state of New York and the United States government asking me, with all due respect, please don't work. As a matter of fact, by the time I got to you people, I was on the government's, this is another great thing, the government was sending me, like I flipped out on my first wife, not to be confused with my second wife, but my third one's the real one. But my first wife, no, Sharon, she was great. She is. She just retired to Florida. That's special. But she took us to SSI and had me sit there. I mean, my hands were shaking. I was not functional. And she got me on this Social Security. And I had always worked. I was a functional alcoholic, and I had made good money as a sales manager. And they prorate how much you're going to get paid based on how much you're making and how old you are. So here I was in my 20s. I'm making deep-pocketed money. She takes me down and I'm shaking. They do their evaluation. When I got to you people, I was being paid by the United States government $1,407 a month tax-free in 1980. It's a very livable wage. As a matter of fact, for the first couple of years I was here, I was on that disability insurance. And I was living large, driving Z cars, living on the intercoastal. I mean, it was beautiful. But and the greatest part of that story is 6 months ago, I get a letter in the mail from Social Security. Now that you're ready to retire. I like I'm getting double Social Security twice for being this big of a defective. I mean, how cool is that? What I'm going to say to you, and I promise you this, I just promise you that if you're sitting here tonight and you knew, or you're relatively new, or you're coming back, and you don't, oh, he was leaving. There would have been something. No. Not worried about it. I'm talking about the big guy with the blue shirt. And the thing. That's all. We're okay. We're good. If you're here tonight and you're new, or you're in a treatment center, or you're in one of those places, or halfway house, and you don't really know if you want to be there, and you don't know if you want to do this thing, and you don't know if it's really for you, and you're thinking of all of these reasons why you should be excluded from having to be here, I'm just going to ask you one thing. As a matter of fact, the co-founders wrote in here this following thing, so I'm going to reiterate it. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. The way I look at it, if Bill Wilson, God rest his soul, and Dr. Bob Smith can beg of me 70 plus years ago to save my life and to give me a life that is not humanly imaginable, I'm going to say that to you. If you're in that first 90 days, please give us the 90 days. That's all I'm asking. You know, they used to say all the time, come to 90 meetings in 90 days. If you don't like where you're at, we'll refund your misery. I promise you we'll still do that. I promise you, if you're sitting in this room tonight, you didn't get here because life was a panacea. You didn't get here because you woke up yesterday morning and said, huh, now that 2.5 men's canceled, I think I'll go to AA. I mean, that's not the way it happened. Trust me, it's not, and I really didn't want to do any of his stuff. See, I'll pay the price. I swear, I've been yelling at people all week. I did it on Facebook. I said, stop it, you can't. But, see, I'll throw anyone under the bus for a cheap joke. Here's the key. Give yourself 90 days, please. We beg of you. Get a sponsor. Don't even get a sponsor. Get somebody's phone number. Don't even get someone's phone number. Ask them where they're going tomorrow. If you're in the van patrol, it's easy because they're going to tell you where you're going. But if you happen to be loose for some reason, and you have your own little abode, ask someone where they're going tomorrow. Because if you go together, you have a better chance of not getting cut out of the crowd. You know, I got sober, and I'm sure that practically no one here remembers this. It was something known as the Iranian hostage crisis that started at the end of 1979. Now, I got sober February 12, 1980. I was living in Sunrise Lakes in an apartment, and every night after I got into this thing, I knew this was the deal. Nobody had to coerce me to do anything. I said, oh, thank you, God. Well, I didn't even believe in God. I just said, thank you. Something had happened. And it continues to happen, which is why I continue to come. But the beautiful thing is, I would go home at night after going to 4 or 5 meetings during the day, and then dinner at Lester's, usually Lester's. That was like the old place. And I'd get home at Sunrise Lakes, and I'd turn on the television. And the opening story was day 77 of the Iranian hostage crisis. They were tracking my sobriety. I was so pissed when they were released because nobody was counting anymore. I love to have fun in this deal. The first time that I even made any facial... This will get you. You'll like this one. The first time I ever like gave any sort of an indication that I still had smiling bones left in my face was the first time I ever heard Ray Allen, God rest his soul, who was my sponsor. And he'd be sitting, and he talked about this time that he was sitting at the 101 Club, and he heard his, he was at Brooklyn where he got sober. And he was sitting in a meeting, one of his first meetings, and he's with this guy, Dan, and there's a guy speaking from the podium. And the guy says, yeah, I'll tell you what. I was sober 6 or 9 months. And all of a sudden, I got my house back. And Ray's listening. He says, wow, that's great. And then the guy says, and you know what? Another 3 or 6 months, and I got my job back. And another few months, I got my car back. And then he says, and then finally, after in the middle of the second year, I got my wife back. And Ray leaned over to this guy, Dan, and he says, do I have to get my wife back? I heard that. And I was so hysterical. Because, like, Ray had 6 jokes he told in this whole 50 years of sobriety. And I laughed harder every time I heard him. I promise you, you'll hear them all in the coming weeks. Because that what he left me was a legacy of laughter. He left me a legacy of gratitude. He left me the fact of don't take yourself too seriously. He left me a legacy of, you know what, you're here today, whatever the problem or issue is, it will pass, no matter what it is. Of course, everything passes. He left me the legacy of everything is perfect right as it is right now. Don't shoulda on yourself. Every one other word out of my mouth, well, I shoulda, I woulda, I coulda. Stop it. Stop shoulda on yourself. The fact that you're here, realize how blessed and fortunate and unbelievably rescued you are. Because just check the obituaries on any given morning in the Sun Sentinel. And the fact is, the people you see that died before they're 30 or 40 years old, generally, as a result of this disease, one way or another. It's like not normal deaths. I mean, you know, Mikey, God rest his soul, 44, but, you know, and it's a heart attack, okay? But other than that, you just look and you'll invariably see in the obituary, and donations can be made to the House of Hope. Or donations can be made to the South Florida something. I mean, the reality is we abuse ourselves so badly out there, and we're in here. Let us embrace you. Let us love you back to life. That's what we do here. We rescue the sick. You know, this tape I was listening to, this Bill Wilson tape? Bill Wilson got sober in December of 1934. Okay, and great sick story, you know. Really, he was a bottom feeder. You know, he's a promoter, degenerate stockbroker, deal maker, you know, everything. I identify with him because that's what I was. Sometimes still am. And Dr. Bob Smith was a proctologist, or like Bill says, that he was a hiney doctor. That's the way Bill talked about it on the tape. So here's the story. Bill gets this miracle, this white light experience, and he realizes he doesn't have to drink anymore, and he wants to go out and save the world. And he goes, and he's running all around Towns Hospital in New York, and all. He's going to hundreds of thousands of people. Not one person got it. And he went to one of the big shots back then, and he's says, what am I doing wrong? And then he hooks up with Dr. Bob, in 1935, which is the official birth date, by the way, of Alcoholics Anonymous, the day they met, which is June 10th, 1935. That was Dr. Bob's last drink. Bill had 6 months. And they met, and they spent 5 hours together. And when they finished this five-hour talk, they realized The only way that either of them was going to be able to stay sober was finding someone else. And back then, it wasn't as abundant here now with treatment centers and all of this crap. There was one hospital. And they were in Akron, and they called Dr. Bob, calls up the hospital. He talks to the nurse. He says, listen to me. I'm here with a friend of mine who has a cure for alcoholism from New York. And we want to come up if you have someone who's in really bad shape. And this nurse, since Dr. Bob was in that hospital 9 million times, says, but Dr. Bob, are you drunk right now making this phone call? No, I'm sober. He worked on me. She says, okay, why don't you two guys come up here? I have a guy in a private room because he is in very bad shape. They went. They spoke to him. The guy called his wife there to hear what these guys had told him. That became AA number 3, Bill D. That's the picture of the man in the bed that you see all around AA. The fact is, please, we beg of you. There's so many things here about surrender, about willingness, about honesty, all that. That'll come in time. Do one thing for tonight, just to humor me. Just humor me with this. When you go home tonight, whether you believe in anything, you don't believe it, it doesn't matter. Somehow, if you're an alcoholic or a drug addict like me, and you stayed sober for this 60 minutes without doing any shakes or quivers or going through seizures, something happened. So I don't care what you do or don't believe in. When you go home tonight, I don't care what position you're in. Before you go to bed, just simply say thanks. The longest, greatest prayer in the history of the world, simply say thanks. If you don't believe it, just think about the fact you have probably said some pretty stupid things over the years while you were loaded. So you'll be alone, just simply as you're getting to bed, say thanks. Try me out, come in next week, and we're going to get down to business.